This podcast is for alcoholics that have a willingness to recover from their alcoholism by being taught and practicing the principles of the 12 steps as outlined in the Big Book and the 12 and 12 of Alcoholics Anonymous. My name is Ilya, and I am an alcoholic. Page XIII, forward to first edition, first paragraph. We of Alcoholics Anonymous are more than 100 men and women who have recovered from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body. To show other alcoholics precisely how we have recovered is the main purpose of this book. For them, we hope these pages will prove so convincing that no further authentication will be necessary. We think this account of our experiences will help everyone to better understand the alcoholic. Many do not comprehend that the alcoholic is a very sick person, and besides, we are sure that our way of living has its advantages for all. Page 6 of the 12 Steps and 12 Traditions. Step 5, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. 12 Steps deflate ego. Step 5 is difficult but necessary to sobriety and peace of mind. Confession is an ancient discipline. Without fearless admission of defects, few could stay sober. What do we receive from Step 5? Beginning of true kinship with man and God, lose sense of isolation, receive forgiveness and give it, learn humility, gain honesty and realism about ourselves, necessity for complete honesty, danger of rationalization, how to choose the person in whom to confide, results are tranquility and consciousness of God. Oneness with God and man prepares us for following steps. So again, that's the long form of step 5 in the table of contents. And now we'll go to step 5 in the same book, in the 12 and 12. And I'll read the first paragraph. Actually, the first two paragraphs. Step 5, page 55. All of AA's 12 steps ask us to go contrary to our natural desires. They all deflate our egos. When it comes to ego deflation, few steps are harder to take than step 5. But scarcely any step is more necessary to long-time sobriety and peace of mind than this one. So, reading that first paragraph, Bill introduces the word ego, deflation of our ego. So, what is our ego? Well, our ego is our self-will, but we run riot with it. So it goes against our natural desires as alcoholics to want to deflate the ego that has gotten you all of your natural desires your whole life. It is very scary for me to think that now this program is asking me to deflate my ego. So how am I supposed to get what I want and need? I don't know any other way to do that. And that is goes against my survival instincts as an alcoholic. So at this point, the deflation process is very difficult. It says few steps are harder to take than 5, because we're asking for help now. You may have a sponsor, you may have been shown the literature or the program if you're lucky, and now you have your fourth step inventory, and you need to actually admit your inner life and your defects and your secrets to another human being. I don't see how that wouldn't be scary to any human being, let alone a fearful alcoholic. But it does say that it's necessary for what? For not just sobriety, but it says for long-term sobriety, long-time sobriety. That's the first thing. So I have no doubt that there are alcoholics out there listening that has no problem getting short-term sobriety running another program. I used other programs and was able to get 9 months at one point, a few weeks at some depending on where I was at the time in my life, but never I was able to acquire long-time sobriety. Long-time, long-term, lifetime. I don't like to use the word lifetime, but that's exactly what my, my agenda is when I work this program one day at a time. We don't want to say we're never going to drink again because anything can happen, and we're testing fate when we say I'm never going to do something again. So in order to stay humble, I have to work this program daily in order to achieve long-term sobriety one day at a time. And what comes with that, secondly, is peace of mind. So an alcoholic, as said in the last podcast, needs peace. Okay? We don't just want peace, we need it. Now, I don't necessarily mean peace between you and another person or peace among the world. I'm talking about inner peace. We can't always solve every problem with another human being and come to peaceful terms. Sometimes peace means not being in a relationship with another person that you can't deal with anymore because they activate your character defects and they're not being removed by your higher power. Well, maybe they're not being removed because you're not supposed to be in that relationship. But when you disengage from it, then all of a sudden your defects are no longer activated by that person. But alcoholics don't like that because they think that, the relationship has to stay in play and that God's going to just remove their defects on their terms. But we can't do that. Inner peace comes first. So I'm not necessarily suggesting you break it off with anyone you're with right now, but think it through. If you can't get inner peace with that person, then maybe it's time to think about alternatives. But we don't know. Those are one-off situations depending on the alcoholic and the person. So, it takes time to do an inventory and understand yourself and know what good choices and decisions are best for you when you work all 12 steps. And that's why nobody can tell you how to live. Because eventually your higher power will tell you. Not literally, but you will get intuitive thinking connection with your higher power, and you will know that it's right to stay or go. So let's read the next paragraph on page 55. AA experience has taught us we cannot live alone with our pressing problems and the character defects which cause or aggravate them. If we have swept the searchlight of step four back and forth over our careers, and it has revealed in stark relief those experiences we'd rather not remember, if we have come to know how wrong thinking and action have hurt us and others, then the need to quit living by ourselves with those tormenting ghosts of yesterday gets more urgent than ever. We have to talk to somebody about them. So, you've done a thorough step four, and hopefully you have, and you haven't done a half-measured inventory. And it says that if we do half measures, we avail nothing. So we've swept the searchlight to the best of our ability, and we've revealed the character flaws that we think we have, and how our natural desires have caused them. So these tormenting ghosts of our past have to be addressed, and the resentments and the fears and the relationships and the harms to yesterday is a heavy load to carry. You can't let go of those things without help. You can imagine trying to do that by yourself. We have our whole lives by drinking and numbing that and stuffing it down. So this disease activates character defects. We have problems that may not be a big deal to others, but they are to us. I mean, we are very much always in a state of turmoil. There's always a problem in our lives, whether it's another human being or a situation, a thing, or a place. And when we have a problem, we're in what? We're in trouble. Okay, an alcoholic that has a problem of any kind is in trouble. And trouble activates character defects. And what we need to do is get to the truth on why these defects are being activated. And in order to do that, we have to talk to somebody else who is unattached to your problems. And that's why it's not always a good idea to pick a family member or somebody that knows you very well. Now, it's okay to pick somebody that understands your disease and knows you somewhat, but to somebody you have a deep attachment to can be a dangerous person to confide in for this purpose. So let's read on to the next paragraph. So intense, though, is our fear and reluctance to do this that many AAs at first try to bypass step five. We search for an easier way, which usually consists of the general and fairly painless admission that when drinking we were sometimes bad actors. Then for good measure we add dramatic descriptions of that part of our drinking behavior, which our friends probably know about anyhow. So, we rationalize, I rationalized, this step was, a fourth step was hard enough, this step just seemed next to impossible. Again, I thought I was going to be humiliated. And I confused that word humility with humiliation. This admission just felt like it was just too scary when he uses the word fear and reluctance. And then I go back to my rationalization. I was just, a bad actor when I was drinking. If you were drunk too, you'd do the same thing. I can be forgiven because I was wasted. So there's really no need to talk to another person about this. Everybody knows, that I was wasted at the time. But, everyone knew that we were, alcoholics well before we admitted it. So, another alcoholic that you, if you're in AA and you're asking for help, you're most likely an alcoholic. I'm not saying you definitely are, but if you've gotten this far, you probably are. People do check out AA and come to the conclusion they were just hard drinkers and work another program and go on with their lives. But if you've tried that and you can't continue to drink safely ever or control and enjoy it under any occasion, then yeah, you're probably an chronic alcoholic. So if you're talking to another chronic alcoholic who's recovered, they know that you what your drinking behavior is. They may not know the specifics of all your war story, but they know you better than you as far as this disease is concerned. And you know nothing about what they have. You want what they have, not the other way around. They know all about you. And you know nothing about recovery. So you just have to trust the literature and the step process that this works, and their bill is informing you of the rationalizations that people before you have already thought about. We do step five for the resentment inventory because we have an inner anger in our lives. We start with a resentment inventory because an inner anger can be just as destructive, or is just as destructive, as an external anger. If I'm yelling and screaming all the time and others say, hey, that Ilya guy is a pretty angry guy, but then there's another guy who's always quiet and doesn't say much, it doesn't mean they're not angry either. That inner anger is festering inside them, and they could blow up one day, and everyone could be like, wow, that guy, Bob, he really blew up. Never saw that coming, you know? So we really have to understand that whether you're an introvert or an extrovert when it comes to your anger, it's a devastating handicap that will kill you. So we have to discuss our anger with another person, which is our resentment inventory. So bottom of 55, last paragraph. But of the things which really bother and burn us, we say nothing. Certain distressing or humiliating memories, we tell ourselves, ought to be shared with, not to be shared with anyone. These will remain our secret. Not a soul must ever know. We hope they'll go to the grave with us. And so, you know, you can do a full-blown inventory and leave something really in your mind that is just too humiliating or too dark a secret to tell. It could be a crime. It could be something terrible. And I'm not saying that, you know, if you committed a murder that you should tell a sponsor because you're actually putting them in a position that's not good. If a police officer asks them, you know, if they know anything about it, that's not the kind of thing I'm talking about here. Maybe you should admit that to, you know, a priest. But as far as anything else goes, that is truly not something that I think can put your sponsor in a bad position, then you need to admit that to that sponsor. And there are very, 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 very few things that fit the bill to not tell your sponsor. And even then, you still need to find somebody that you can tell, nonetheless, because that'll get you back to drinking anyway. And you know, that's more addressed in 8 and 9 than anything. But we need to talk about how we make an inventory about everything, every nook and cranny, not just the things we like to tell other people we're okay with, but everything. There were things on my inventory that involved abusive relationships that I took acts I'm not proud of. I'm not going to say that I, you know, I did things criminally on a podcast, but yes, there were things that I will leave it at that, that would have at the time could have put me in jail. But those are over and done with, and there's no way that those people or those situations can come back to become a criminal investigation. So therefore, I tell my sponsor. So those things have to be disclosed if there's no chance of incriminating your sponsor or putting them in a bad position. So be careful when you use that excuse, because I thought it was an excuse, and then I realized that it is ridiculous not to tell them about something that happened 20 years ago. That I can't even remember the name of the person, but I was more ashamed of the act than anything, so I was going to say, I'll just take that one to the grave. No, that doesn't count to that your sponsor will not get in any trouble knowing that information. Therefore, you should tell them. So there's nothing for the most part that can't be told. And why do we do that? Because we're as sick as our secrets. Any secret that you keep, even if it is something that would, you know, potentially put your sponsor in a bad position, it must be told at some point to somebody. We've all done things we're not proud of, but it needs to be discussed because we get as sick as our secrets. One secret can poison all the work that you've done. So it's pointless not to give that last secret to off to get that last secret out of the dark. So I mentioned in the last podcast, you know, there are old timers in AA who go to meetings and you can tell they're miserable. And most of the time, if not all the time, they are the people who have sat around the rooms for years and haven't worked the entire AA program. And so they're miserable. They go to meetings for to feel better, but they never actually were released from their disease. They're still in their disease. They may feel better sitting around a meeting, gloating about how they're sober or abstinent is the truth of the matter, and tell you how to live. And that you don't need these books, and that AA is, you know, more than the literature. It's a fellowship, and all you need is meetings. Meeting makers make it. That is not true. On the meeting rhetoric sheet that I uploaded to the Dropbox drive, you'll see that there's meeting makers make it is not a fact. Meeting makers that work the steps make it, not just meeting makers alone. There are plenty of people who go to meetings and relapse or sit there miserable for years and then commit suicide. That is not recovery. That is avoidance of the steps and then teaching a alternative false message to newcomers. It says right here on the middle of page 56, well, let's read the whole paragraph and then we'll get to the most important line. 56, first full paragraph. Yet if AA's experience means anything at all, this is not only unwise, but is actually a perilous resolve. Few muddled attitudes have caused us more trouble than holding back on step five. Some people are unable to stay sober at all. Others will relapse periodically until they really clean house. Even AA old-timers, here's the line, even AA old-timers, sober for years, often pay dearly for skimping this step. They will tell how they tried to carry the load alone, how much they suffered of irritability, anxiety, remorse, and depression, and how unconsciously seeking relief, they would sometimes accuse even their best friends of the very character defects they themselves were trying to conceal. They always discovered that relief never came by confessing the sins of other people. Everybody had to confess his own. So that line, you know, kind of sums up what I already knew and what I already said prior to reading it. So it can be perilous if you don't admit all your defects and all your secrets to another alcoholic or in another human being, if you prefer. Some people cannot stay sober at all. Others will relapse periodically until they clean house. So there are folks who keep coming in and out of the rooms, bleeding hearts, sharing all their problems and giving advice to other alcoholics, and they seem like they're so well put together and that they're on their way, and then you don't see them for a while, and then, you know, a year, however much time goes by, they keep crawling back into the rooms asking for help. And we tell them the same message, that's if they're lucky enough to even hear the message. Then they still refuse to do this work. Or you can go to meetings that don't even discuss this message, and it's just a bunch of people sitting around in a group therapy setting with the AA brand hanging over the wall, with absolute no teaching, no reading of this literature of any kind. What more can I say? You know, you have an open discussion where the topic is one general idea, and you've got a bunch of grandiose egomaniacs telling you how to accept life. It makes no sense. It's no program. It doesn't work. You'll go there for I don't know how long you can stand it until you say AA is a crock of crap. Don't go. And you say the program didn't work. Well, you never knew the program in the first place. So it's not your fault. Very few people teach the program in AA. If it's a big book meeting, a literature meeting, you're in better shape than an open discussion meeting, in my opinion. Bill Wilson clearly stated that the point of teaching of AA, an AA meeting is to teach and understand this program. Nothing more. And an open discussion meeting was an overview of AA and how it worked. And that's all the newcomer who didn't understand what AA was to hear. Not a whole bunch of crying babies talk about their problems for the rest of their lives. And yes, you know, they go there for what? Why would a bunch of crying adult babies go to a meetings over and over again, not learning and avoiding this program? Well, I'll tell you, because all they want is sympathy and attention, just like any alcoholic baby does. So, you know, we're children. We you know, and I'm not saying that I wasn't one of them. I was, you know, I was a child, and I can behave like one at sometimes at 45 years old. I can be a child. So I certainly don't have to, stop drinking to be a child again, or to drink to be a child again. I can stop drinking, and I'm right where I left off when I was, 15 years old, when I first picked up my first drunk. So, imagine a group full of baby children, adult children, king babies sitting around talking about their problems and giving each other advice and sharing for years. That just turns into a rat's nest of hostility, anger, and relapse. It's not worth it. I don't advise you to stick around those meetings for long. In any event, so we have the alcoholic old timer who doesn't do the work, but he's always in that meeting. We talked about that guy in my prior podcast. I said I have a little bit of a resentment problem towards those guys, but I'm working on it. Because I see a an old timer who doesn't teach the program as somebody who's killing newcomers. They know that there's a program. They refuse to work it. They want to teach it to someone else who doesn't know that there's a program and teaches them a five-step program, which is not the AA program. And then what ends up happening? I don't mean the first five steps either. I mean a five-step program, a totally different program of just praying, getting on your knees, and making a call to a sponsor and going to a meeting and praying again at the end of the night to keep you away from a drink. You try doing that for the rest of your life without any growth and see what you become. You do not become a happy, joyous, and free recovered alcoholic. I guarantee you that. So, who are we going to listen to? That's the whole point of step five, is who am I going to talk to? I'm here to talk to another human being. I better pick somebody that knows this literature, or they could be leading me to my death, and I don't even know it. And I guarantee you that you wouldn't be the first person that they drew energy from and took advantage of you as a newcomer. And if you did die, I know old timers who wouldn't even go to their sponsees' funerals. And they've been to many AA meetings, trying and seemingly helping them. But when they die, they don't even bother going to their funeral. What does that tell you about that kind of person? It's an egomaniac who you should stay away from. Tolerate them, they're in the rooms, but if you don't know the program, you don't know what they're telling you is a load of crap. Next paragraph, page 56. This practice of admitting one's defects to another person is, of course, very ancient. It has been validated in every century, and it characterizes the lives of all spiritually centered and truly religious people. But today, religion is by no means the sole advocate of this saving principle. Psychiatrists and psychologists point out the deep need every human being has for practical insight and knowledge of his own personality flaws, and for a discussion of them with an understanding and trustworthy person. So far as alcoholics are concerned, AA would go even further. Most of us would declare that without a fearless admission of our defects to another human being, we could not stay sober. It seems plain that the grace of God will not enter to expel our destructive obsession until we're willing to try this. So, again, trustworthy person, discussing our flaws. This is an ancient practice that's well before any religion was developed. I'm sure that people were confessing to other, confiding in other human beings well before 5,000 years ago. So, it's something that even psychologists and psychiatrists agree upon. So, nothing wrong with it. It's an ancient practice. If again, he's saying if we don't do it, we probably won't stay sober, and that this is the work that's required by our higher power, by all higher powers. Use the word God if you want. Bill uses the word God. I choose higher power, to keep in more of an open mind to someone who's listening that may think I believe necessarily in a Christian or a God that immediately pops into their mind. No, it's a higher power of my understanding that will not expel the obsession of my drinking and my problems until I'm willing to def confide my flaws and my inventory with another human being. That we can all agree upon, just as much as if I jump off a building There's no doubt in my mind that no higher power is going to come along and stop me from falling and hitting the ground. I will fall. I will hit the ground. And that is a fact of nature. And this is the same fact in a spiritual manner. If I don't do the admission, I will fall to the ground. No one will be there to catch me. So it talks about, in the next bit here of 57, and I'm not going to read the whole essay, but I just wanted to hammer home the points because you can read this essay. And he talks about, the benefits of having a step five experience, and that we isolate and we need to reach out for help. And if you can't reach out to somebody who understands your disease or understands what you're trying to accomplish, then your higher power is going to keep you cut off from it. Step five is extremely important. We did discuss in the last podcast the definition of humility. I'll revisit it again here. The definition of humility, as far as AA is concerned, is on page 58, the first full paragraph towards the middle of the page. It says, "Another great dividend we may expect from confiding our defects to another human being is humility, a word often misunderstood. To those who have made progress in AA, it amounts to a clear recognition of what and who we really are, followed by a sincere attempt to become what we could be. Therefore, our first practical move toward humility must consist of recognizing our deficiencies." So we have to understand that AA has a specific definition of humility. So it's right here in the book, page 58. It's two parts. First part is to amount to a clear recognition of who and what I really am. And that means that I have to do a fourth and fifth step. How can I know who and what I really am without help from someone else? I've been trying to figure that out my whole life. And I didn't even know how to explain it to other people because they just didn't understand because I thought I was so unique and different than everybody. So who would understand anyway? Well, Bill has taught us how to create a format in which we can categorize and itemize each of the main things that block us from other people and our higher power, which are resentments, our fears, our relationships, and our harms to others. And now we can understand the flaws or deficiencies that are as a result of those categories as it relates to our God-given base instincts, our animal instincts being affected to an extreme and being taken to an extreme. So now that I understand that, that's a huge sense of relief, but I still don't understand how was I selfish, how was I dishonest, how was I self-seeking, how was I fearful, and how was I inconsiderate. And maybe I'm wrong about what base instinct was threatened. Maybe I thought it was material security when it was really companionship. Maybe I thought it was a personal relationship when it was really emotional security. I don't know. I need help from somebody who does know and who's wiser in this and more experienced and who has made progress in AA. So that's why I do this. And then the second half, he's introducing that we're going to have to get rid of them. He said we're blocked. And we have to get rid of the things in which we are blocking us from what? Blocking us from our higher power. So in 6 and 7 and the rest of the program, we're going to become what we could be. And we don't know what you could be is different than what I could be. We all are created in this universe for a different purpose. But we do know that we are supposed to uniformly try to become better people by the removal of these defects with the help of God or your higher power, if you will, in order to reveal what you could be. What you could be is revealed. And that can't be told to you by a sponsor. They can only help you do the work and understand the truth so that can be revealed to you by your higher power. And if guilt and remorse and your defects are blocking you from that, you will never know what you could have been. And that is true humility. So it's not easy. No one said it's easy, but it's simple. If you start to understand this, it's actually quite simple. But people have complicated it. And we listen to people that complicate things, and we end up more complicated and screwed up. So, what we, you know, he goes through that, and then, there's another line on page 59. I want you to keep reading, you know, and understand some of the questions he's asking that go back to your base instincts that may have been harming you or threatening you. I'm sorry. But there's a line that I have on 59. It says, "The Creator gave us our lives in the first place." You know, I said in a prior podcast that, you know, if you believe that you created your own life, you're insane. And it's true. I mean, you didn't create your life. You were delivered onto this earth, or came out of this earth, if you think about it. And here you are. So whatever that is, whatever created you, forget the science of it. You didn't create yourself. Something else put you here. So it gave you life. And if a creator puts you in a body and put you in a mi and gave you a body and a mind, you will have an ego. All right? And you will have instincts, natural desires. Nothing wrong with those things. But remember, what we're doing here is we're deflating the ego. We're not getting rid of the ego. Bill doesn't say, get rid of your ego and get rid of your God-given instincts. I don't know why I go into the room sometimes and people start arguing with me about that point. I said, if you've even read these books, it doesn't say anywhere that we have to remove our ego entirely and give up our instincts, our natural desires entirely. Nobody can do that. As long as, like I said, you have a body and a mind, you're human, you have an ego. It's reality. So if you have an ego, you have needs. And what do we do? Again, this is a disease of what? It is a disease of extremes. We take everything to an extreme, and our ego is what drives us insane. Okay? And our ego is attached to externals, external things. So if you think you can fix yourself by getting what you think you want in this world externally, which are the three main categories, which I said, society, security, and sex, and have all of those natural desires fulfilled, then tell me why billionaires are miserable and some of them want to kill themselves and some have. So if that was the true answer, then we would see proof in millionaires and multimillionaires who have all of those things, the trophy wife, the trophy husband, the best career, the best car, the best house, the great looks. And there are many who are completely miserable, who are alcoholics. And there are people who work this program who literally can live under a bridge and be accepting of the conditions. Now, I'm not saying you need to go out and live under a bridge and try this program. I'm just saying that that proof is in the pudding. You know, if you have a homeless person who works these steps, I doubt they'll be homeless for very long, to be quite honest. But at first, if they work this program and they still stay homeless, they're going to have more peace and serenity than the multimillionaire who's insane because it's never enough. So, external things are not what we're trying to accomplish here. Your temp, your natural desires will also be given to you in moderation by your higher power, and you can't control those. Those are tempered and redirected by your higher power, but you need to be willing to at first look at yourself and understand your defects of character before your higher power is going to do anything for you. And so that was it. That's what it was for me when I skipped steps. Okay, I have tried to skip steps. I have made amends too soon, and it was all self-seeking and ego-driven mania. And I didn't know it. I thought I was trying to get better, but I wanted to get better quick. And I didn't have patience for this program. It was too slow. And alcoholics are very impatient people. And even if we want to get better for the right reasons, we still have to go through the process, the painstaking process of letting things take time. You don't open up a flower petal with a sledgehammer. Okay? It takes time for that flower petal to open up. And the same with us. And it's different for everybody, but I guarantee you the timing's different for everybody, but I guarantee you it will not open if you don't do steps 4 and 5. So now we're going to go to a line in page 60 that I have underlined because I continue, like I said, want you to continue reading this essay, but I'm giving you the main points and interjecting with my rationalization and wishful thinking experiences when it comes to what we think is God's will and what's not God's will. So let's talk about page 60. I'm going to read the full first paragraph, which is basically the whole middle of the page. Another reason why we shouldn't do this alone. The second difficulty is this. What comes to us alone may be garbled by our own rationalization and wishful thinking. The benefit of talking to another person is that we can get his direct comment and counsel to our situation, and there can be no doubt in our minds what that advice is. Going it alone in spiritual matters is dangerous. How many times have we heard well-intentioned people claim the guidance of God when it was all too plain that they were sorely mistaken? Lacking both practice and humility, they had deluded themselves and were able to justify the most errant nonsense on the ground that this was God, what God had told them. It is worth noting that people of very high spiritual development almost always insist on checking with friends or spiritual advisors the guidance they feel they have received from God. Surely, then a novice ought not lay himself open to the chance of making foolish, perhaps tragic, blunders in this fashion. While the comment or advice of others may be by no means infallible, it is likely to be far more specific than any direct guidance we may receive while we are still so inexperienced in establishing contact with a power greater than ourselves. So there's a lot there. The main thing I have underlined in my book is lacking both practice and humility, they had deluded themselves and were able to justify the most errant nonsense on the ground that this was what God had told them. How many times have we convinced ourselves that, you know, I just needed to win the lottery. I'm going to buy a lot of, you know, this is nonsense, by the way. If I win the lottery, my problems will be solved. And I don't need any help from anyone else to know that I need to be, you know, a lottery winner to have a happy life. It's ridiculous. Or I'm going to pray for another person to get that job back. Because if they get that job back, then my life will be better. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to manipulate the situation and lie and tell people untruths about the situation so I can get what I need. But I'm doing the right thing because that person needs that job. So what I do, there's another example of doing something what I think is good, but it's really for my own benefit. So, you know, there's lots of things I can come up with in my mind that I think are good, but I don't know what's necessarily good for me or anybody else. But typically, it will always be something self-seeking that I think that God told me. God told me that I had to get rich. God told me that I had to help this other person get on a career path that I think is best for them. You know, I'm playing God in all these situations, and I'm just trying to get what I think I need and want, whether it comes to society, security, or sex, one of the three. So it's a delusion. I have no humility. I don't understand my character defects. I don't even understand I'm being selfish or dishonest. I certainly don't understand that my instincts are out of whack. And if I don't talk to another human being about this, I'm not going to know what the problem is and why it's affecting me and activating character defects that I don't think I even have. So it's not the program to go straight to God as a novice. Now, I'm not saying that once you get good at this program, you have to discuss every little issue with another human being. But when you're new and you're a novice and you don't understand this program and you haven't practiced it enough, you certainly are going to make ridiculous errors that can be avoided in the name of God. Yes, ultimately God, after you've practiced this program for years, becomes your higher power. If you are becomes your ultimate sponsor, I'm sorry, your God or your higher power is your ultimately your sponsor. But if you're a newcomer and you think that you're an expert at this, and you're going to use that as an excuse that say, my higher powers, my ultimately my true sponsor, and skip the steps, you will never have contact with a higher power. It says here, we are inexperienced in establishing contact with a power greater than ourselves. You're new, you don't know how to contact your higher power. So first you need to be able to know how to do that. And then once you get good at this program, which you do, people get better when they practice. What's it say in the 12th step? You know, we continue to practice this program in all our affairs. Well, practicing means that I get better at something, whether it's a sport or anything for that matter. I've always gotten better at something that I've practiced. So when I practice these principles in all my affairs, I'm not going to need to go to another human being eventually for every little thing that disturbs me or every little problem that I've dealt with before. That's when I become more dependent on my higher power, in turn, become more independent of a human being. So I actually gain freedom for working this program as opposed to being in chains and in bondage of my ego. So be careful when you use that excuse. It's not an excuse. You'll have spiritual experiences as you work these steps, but you're a far cry from having the expertise to go directly to your higher power and do steps 4 through 10 in a millisecond. I mean, I can do steps. I can do all 12 steps now in 2 minutes. Okay, I've been doing this program long enough to where I can close my eyes, go through 1 through 12 before a thought, a behavior, an action takes place. And normally my disease would take that thought, turn it into a resentment or a fear. My behavior would be odd. I'd be thinking and obsessing and becoming more and more extremely fearful over whatever it is that's bothering me. And then I would take an incorrect action and hurt myself or hurt someone else. If you think you can get through that in less than 2 minutes, then you're a natural. I was not a natural. I'm the educational variety, as it explains in Appendix 2. Most of us are the ec or a lot of us are the educational variety, where we learn this program over time, and then we get to that spiritual awakening, like Bill experienced before he worked the program. But it is not a requirement. And let me say this: just because Bill had a spiritual experience or an awakening, if you will, in bed that night, it went away. Okay, it wasn't permanent. So he may have had that because that was the will of the universe for this man to come up with the AA program. We all have our own path. That was Bill Wilson's. Thank God, right? Otherwise, I wouldn't be alive today, and maybe neither you will you. So it's a message we carry because he opened himself up to the experience of his higher power and put these books out. That was what he was supposed to do, and that's what he did. But even then, there's many letters that he's written where he didn't have emotional sobriety for like 12 years of his life. Bill Wilson went into a deep depression for 12 years, and they didn't have antidepressants back then or anything to help. So, you know, he was just basically living in his will, depressed. And he wrote a letter called Emotional Sobriety. You may want to Google that. And it talks about how, looking back in hindsight, he was really putting his instincts first before the removal of his defects and his higher power. So that, you know, means that even the co-founder and writer of this program can write it all out, give it to us, give it to humanity, and still he must do it himself in order to survive, in order to stay sober. So this program does not discriminate or does take any give anyone any special considerations. So the program is really the action steps can't be skipped. I can't say that enough. Find another human being that you can ask your higher power for help if you're having a problem with it. And follow the directions in my prior podcasts that come from the literature, and print out the inventories, and do steps 4 and 5. Because I'm going to get into steps 6 and 7 next, and steps 6 and 7 are going to be about the removal of these defects. And now we're back into they are action steps, but now we're now we're becoming ready again to change. You know, we became ready when we admitted our disease and the solution and made a decision. But now that we know who and what we really are, we're going to be moving into the removal of these defects so we can become who we could be. And in 8 and 9, we remove the guilt and remorse of the harms we've done to other people and try to plug ourselves back into being an other-centered member of society. And if we don't do that, then we can't become who we could be. So, see, I hope you're starting to see now how all of these steps are interconnected, and you can't skip steps or you can't do the next step unless you've done the prior steps, all of the prior steps. Step 6 is a waste of time if you haven't done 1 through 5. If you haven't done 5, it's a waste of time to admit your story, life story, to another human being if you haven't done 4. You're not doing what the books are telling you to do or directing you to do. You're creating your own program. And so, you know, I did say, you know, earlier that, you know, we have problems. You know, whenever I have a problem, I'm in trouble. It doesn't even matter if it's not drinking. So I'm gonna skip to one. I'm gonna end this on one last page, on which is the very last page of the 12 steps, on page 125. All right, there's a line here at the very bottom of the page, or the middle of the page, that says, "For it is only by page 125, it's in the first full paragraph towards the middle of the paragraph. For it is only by accepting and solving our problems that we begin to get right with ourselves and with the world around us, and with him who presides over us all. Understanding is the key to right principles and attitudes, and right action is the key to good living. Therefore, the joy of good living is the theme of AA's 12th step." So first I have to have correct understanding before I can have action, before I can take action. If I don't understand myself, if I'm not willing to remove the stock in trade that's unsaleable, if you use the business metaphor that Bill used in How It Works, which are my character defects, flaws, mistakes, shortcomings, all of those are those 5 things, right? So I'm admitting my defects or my wrongs to another human being. Again, I'll leave it at this. Those 5 things are selfishness, dishonesty, self-seeking, fear, and inconsideration of others. Those are the things I'm trying to rid of myself of with the help of God. So, yes, I'm a problem people. It says here that we're problem people, okay? And the whole point is to try to become less of a problem person and be in the will of my higher power, who just wants me to be peaceful and joyful. And that's what we're trying to do in recovery. We're not just trying to stop drinking. So hopefully by now you see that not drinking comes with the package. It's not the whole package. Not drinking is the obsession of alcohol being removed. If you've made it this far, is probably already removed. You know, God has removed. If you've done a 4th and 5th step thoroughly, you feel like the drink problem has been removed. So the obsession is gone. And now you have to keep it at bay. And if you don't do 6 through 12, it'll come back. All right. So, I hope this podcast was helpful in helping you understand the reason behind 5 after I've gone through the How It Works part in the directions, I'm sorry, in action. I read about step 5 on pages 72 through 75. But there was a lot more to it in the 12 and 12, as you can see. So I hope you guys have a wonderful evening, and God bless you all. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.